say, if we adopt this and say that only somebody 18 years or older, then you don't have that enforcement tool. It was used very frequently. And, because very often then... What's that? Yeah, a lot of my friends got busted. I think it's still used, and I think it ought to stay in the law. I'm sure there's some ridiculous fact situations you can come up with. You can charge a 3-year-old with contributing to delinquency of a 16-and-a-half-year-old or something. Yeah, I'm just saying, just leave it in, you know, being any age.
Okay.
I think it makes sense. Leave it
in. Great.
Elias and Dank would be stink.
I don't think it makes
sense. Leave it in anyway.
Is that
worth the rating?
Okay. All right. Does everybody understand the motion before us? About the motion?
Oh, the original motion?
Yes. Yeah.
All right, is there any objection? There's no objection, motion to adopt. Okay, we're on the next page.
Was there some great reaction for using the old phrase contributing to a delinquency? People didn't like that label or something? Is that what
now you've gone back contributing to delinquency.
Nobody has a problem with the label? I don't.
I think, if you were going to list specific acts, I could see why you want to. But I want to point something. The way I drafted it says where the unlawful sale of controlled substances occurred. The way we define controlled substances does not include marijuana. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you wanted to include marijuana, it's very easy to do. Just tell me if you wanted to include marijuana, and I can include it.
Just include it right in.
I'll be able to deal with it. I just want to know to include the sale.
I think it ought to be included. Controlled substances, or sale of either controlled substance or marijuana.
We have to protect all farmers. This is our last statute.
You have an amendment you wanted to come back with.
There's also, Mr. Chairman, this amendment on page 5, what it does, it takes indecent exposure out of the sexual offenses. It moves into disorderly conduct, and it does change the intent requirement. It also, by moving it into disorderly conduct, makes it a B misdemeanor punishable by 10 days imprisonment. It was felt that the way we defined indecent exposure, we did not concentrate on the typical, basically what people think of as indecent exposure, that the penalty was much too high. So what I drafted up here, and the group agreed to this, the group being the group a couple of Saturdays ago, is that with intent to arouse or gratify the sexual desire of any person, he exposes genitals, buttocks, anus, or female breast for another person under circumstances in which his conduct is likely to cause affront or alarm. Again, it's an amendment to disorderly conduct, added in this subsection. The thing is that the way our indecent exposure statute was drafted, arguably it would make a person who urinated in a city street liable for a misdemeanor. Now, no one on the committee disagreed that that should be regulated. Simply should not be called indecent exposure. It should be basically left to the municipalities to regulate.
I disagree with that.
Well, his intention, if he's doing that, is not to arouse or gratify.
Well, right. That's how.
Yeah, but the original language on
would cover
16 would cover that. Yeah,
that is
Mr. Chairman, I think what you're trying to maintain public peace and order here, I suppose. And as long as there's some level of culpability, I think having a requirement that you've got to prove intention to provide gratification or something, I think is silly. There's some other culpability element, some other more general intent.
It
doesn't say that.
That's what the bill says now.
Oh, you mean?
If he just intentionally does it.
Okay, let me read you this law. A person who willfully and lewdly exposes his person.
Yeah.
Or on the private parts of his person in a public place.
Mr. Chairman, I would just suggest that we can go ahead and move it over to a Class B misdemeanor. Maybe that's a good idea. But I would like to take the original language of the indecent exposure provision and not put in this rather silly intention to arouse stuff.
I just move that we move
indecent exposure over to as a subsection of 1261.110 and leave it pretty much as is and make it a B misdemeanor.
I agree with that.
Okay, there's a motion to move section 141.46 on page 16 to disorderly conduct as a B misdemeanor. Is there any objection to that? There's no objection. Amendment stopped.
And the vote is done.
Okay.
Meeting adjourned.
No more meeting.
Tomorrow we're going to do something.
The sentence is going to be part of the table.
Yes. Contrary to the interest of the Anchorage Times, it says...
The minority decided one of us is similar to one more ago.
Pretty shot at center, right?
Section by section. In detail.
No, right.
Because we can't leave it go along with Sunday.
No, no, no. Do you think anybody else?
What are these invitations?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be over. I think so, the caller. If he is, I shouldn't want to check out the phone.
Yes. How come that horse riding bill ever came to the judiciary?
I think we're blazing.
Because it was Reese.
3-1 is going to fail the Senate.
How much did it pass by? You know, that bill is basically the one we wrote.
He just reintroduced a bill that was in this committee. So
3-1 passed. The bill passed the Senate, and then 2-1, Pamela veto it.
All right. Before you have the sentencing bill, which has all the amendments that we adopted at the last meeting, and some of them were cleaned up, and Barry's going to go through and point those out.
Yeah, that's very few. On page 3 of the bill, line 7, we refer to the sentencing report, and we used to say it had to be furnished to the board of parole. I've added the words if the defendant will be eligible for parole, since the people that are subject to presumptive sentencing are not eligible for parole. The charge page 5, I believe.
Yeah.
On line 15 through 17, the bill as originally drafted said the court may order a defendant convicted of an offense to make restitution, period. I've added while the defendant is serving a term of imprisonment or is conditioned to probation or suspended in position of sentence. And I think it probably was just an oversight for reading that out.
Oh, that's seconded, though.
Well, if it is, you see, we refer to community work down in the next page, down in the next section, and we say on line 24, it's perform community work while the defendant is serving a term of imprisonment or is in a condition of probation or suspended in a position of sentence. I think it would be, I think you should specify.
Well, what if you wanted to have him pay restitution while he was doing community work?
You could do that because it would be a condition of probation. And in other words, you put him on probation, you say, you shall do community work and make restitution.
What about if you do a violation? Is littering a violation?
Is littering a violation?
Now it is.
Yes, that is correct.
Well, what if you wanted to make restitution?
Probably the better thing would be community work, I think.
Yeah, I think either one.
Well, you have to decide. Now, you have to decide then.
That's probably the most likely one, where the guys got littering. In a lot of places, they go make them between 20 miles of the ditch.
Well, then it may be better then, Terry, just to be consistent, I think, is to, you're going to simply say the court may order defend convicted offense to make restitution, just go period, and then on community work, period.
Mr. Chairman, I suppose the thing that I'm concerned about is what happens when you have the offense for which the only treatment is a fine. But there's nothing in here that says that a fine is suspended. Of course, you can have an SIS, a suspended imposition of sentence. But very often the situation there is the judge would, might fine you $300 and suspend all the $250 of it on the condition that you do so-and-so. Now, there's a difference between a suspended sentence, where the sentence is only a fine, and a suspended imposition of sentence. And here we don't account for the situation of that the judge would require somebody to make restitution or do community work as a condition of a suspended sentence, which was only a fine.
Okay.
Right,
thank you.
Yeah.
I'm something different. Hey, Dave.
Okay.
Line 23, I thought we discussed this with everybody, and we still got that damn language in here.
I spoke to Doug about this, and Doug said that it was never voted on.
I don't care what Doug says.
Getting back to the original, let's finish the point we were on, which was on page five, line 14. All right. Do we want that to read just a period after restitution and a period after community work on line 15 and line 24?
The other way to do it is to say as a condition of a suspension. Suspension of a suspension as opposed to condition of a suspended imposition.
Well, then, that still doesn't cover the situation you have of when it's a violation and there's only a fine and there's no term of imprisonment. If the violation isn't a term of imprisonment.
I am not certain that you couldn't require person to community work as a condition of a violation. Because I believe we define violations as punishable only by fines.
Can't
you
do that now?
We can't do it.
Well,
I'm worried this language may be different too much.
Mr.
Chairman, I'm concerned that if you just delete all the language, then it might be argued later that with regard to something that has a particular narrow sentence where the treatment is only a fine, that then it may be argued that the judge cannot do this. If instead, under both restitution and community work,
you add that
you can do it as a condition of the suspension of a portion of a fine.
As a condition
of
suspension
of a fine. You might say a portion of the fine. You might suspend all or a part of
it. No problem.
Because the common thing is that he'll give a $250 fine, require the guy only to pay $50 as long as he cleans up the mess or fixes up whatever he did wrong.
Or as a condition of suspension of fine, apply to both restitution and community work.
I'd move that if necessary.
Or as a condition of a suspension of a fine. Okay, Chris made a motion to add the phrase, or as a condition of a suspension of a fine, on line 16 and on line 25 after the of sentence period, adding that phrase, make sure that when somebody has a suspended fine, it's still required to be restitution to community work. Is there any objection to that amendment? There's no objection to that.
Okay.
But does this lead back to just industry program where a guy goes into the penitentiary, he's working on a salary, and he makes restitutions, but that's what this guy can do that?
Yes, that's what it specifically can do. Okay, if you turn to page 8, okay, as originally drafted on page 8, line 8, we have these sections here that says what you can't do when a person, where's the extra copy of this? What you can't do when a person is subject to presumptive sentencing.
Right.
Well, I included murder also there because I'm sure that was your intention to include murder as well as both degrees of murder. So it was just an oversight. In addition, there was used to be a subsection 3 that said terms of imprisonment shall not otherwise be reduced. Well, that was taken out because when I went back to the governor's bill where that came from, it said terms of imprisonment shall not otherwise be reduced under 1105-150. I believe that's the site, which says you can impose less than the sentence if you stated on the record less than the minimum sentence. Well, that statute is going to be repealed. There's no need to have that statute in the criminal code, and there's no need to have what used to be subsection 3.
Mr. Chairman?
There was one other thing.
I suppose I do have a question. What is our intention on the murder thing? If we say that you've got a 20-year minimum for murder 1 and a 5-year minimum for murder 2, is it our view, or do we ever vote on it that... if in fact the judge gives a 30-year sentence in the one case or a 20-year sentence in the other case, that there should be no ability to have any parole or suspension at all, or did we intend that would only be for the minimum that we stated in the law? would seem to me that, that the thing would be consistent is that basically it doesn't really matter. It's kind of a moot point for murder one, because there you're talking about a difference between you can't have parole at all and can't have parole for 20 years, but for murder two it could be a substantial difference. Are we saying by having an absolute minimum of 5 years that he cannot be paroled until 5 years, even if he gets a 10-year sentence? Can he be subjected to the parole system? Or are we saying that you're just stuck, buddy, you get whatever the judge gives you, even if you're a first offender and it's felony murder or reckless homicide?
Harry, what's the status of it in the draft?
Well, what it says
we
now...
We never really addressed
we
that.
We never did. And that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, the way I drafted it, I don't know what you did, frankly. I know you were talking about, well, you can't suspend a sentence. You're saying you can't put a person on probation. But I don't know what you meant, whether, you know, I was going to raise Fred's point.
We didn't really talk about it.
And you haven't decided parole either on that.
You're suggesting using the law of the presumptive sentencing, once you pass that point, at that point you'd be eligible for parole.
Yeah, because we treated murders specially, you see. And we did put minimums in, and we said that we really meant it for the minimums. But we never really answered the question as a committee with at least 4 to 6 votes or something, does that mean that also that there can be no parole for that minimum? I think that's what it means. I don't think it means there shall never, ever, ever be any parole, and a guy is serving a 20-year sentence for murder too, and he's already served at least 5, that he can't even be considered parole. You know, I don't think so. I think that what we meant is the minimums really are the minimums, however you put that in
right.
the bill.
Fine. I need to clarify that.
Okay, say that 5-year minimum. You don't want to get 2 years of parole.
That's right.
Five-year minimum. Period.
That means that he can't be paroled under murder two until he served his 5 years. He can't be paroled under murder one until he served his 1.
Then let me get this straight. A guy for murder two is sentenced to 25 years. He serves his 10 years. Then he goes before the parole board and they say, hell.
Yeah,
he has to go 5 years.
5 years
minimum. Yeah. Murder one, he has to serve 20 years.
Yeah. We took the discretion away from the judge and the parole system as to that minimum that we voted on. That's what I thought.
Can I ask then another question? Could you sentence a person on murder to 30 years to serve 20 with 10 on probation, 10 suspended and then on probation?
I would love that.
Say it again.
I assume that you would. Okay. I sentence you, you're convicted of first degree murder. I sentence you to 30 years, 20 in jail, then 10, and I suspend 10, and you shall be on probation with no... similar offense.
Yeah, I think that's
the minimum.
Yeah, you still got to serve the.
I understand.
Yeah, you're holding the judge to the minimum. That, you know, he can't go below the minimum.
Right. Right. So what we've got is the 5 and 20 are inviolate by whether it's probation or parole
or judicial suspension.
But those can come into effect after that point.
Okay, I just have to redraft it. It's not a problem.
Is that clear? Okay. All right, then that's the committee's intent.
Okay, then the next thing is Dick. That Dick brought up.
Yeah.
And, I can't find the language, but there's somewhere in there.
Yeah. Hickey or somebody had a suggestion, and we talked about...
Okay, we talked about any disability as a result of the offense.
Yeah. 7 years following the discontinuation of any disability resulting from the offense.
Okay, wait. Following any disability.
And I thought that was all right. I just wanted to make sure that it wouldn't apply to some disability other than what we need.
Resulting from conviction. Okay, and no prior conviction may be considered when a period of 7 more years, seven more years following any disability resulting from conviction of the offense has elapsed from the day of conviction, etc.
Yeah.
Okay, I put that to
you. Yeah, and Mr. Chairman,
why don't we move that?
I'll move that, and then I have a question.
Okay. The language you can move in, on page 8, line 24, and the new phrase, following any disability resulting from conviction of the offense.
And then has elapsed, then follows.
So
you're not
deleting the phrase excluding any period of incarceration.
Right.
Okay. Is there any objection to that?
I'll object for purposes of the question.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I was pretty sure I was in favor of this when it was mentioned by Mr. Hickey and when we talked about a kind of caucus politician style individually, which is what Dick remembered, and somehow we never got it back into the committee. But my only problem is I want to make sure I know what we mean by any disability.
I think what we mean here, you see, I was thinking about that when you proposed it. It may be when you're convicted of felony, you have this certain felony, you have disabilities, and since you can't vote, I have to do some research on that. But what I think we're talking about is probation.
No probation, no parole, that kind of thing. That's the sense of how I want victims to vote it.
Oh, yes.
So okay, you mean probation,
parole, or a period of suspended sentence.
Right.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll put a, since it's my motion, I'll put in a caveat that if that language is the wrong language to accomplish that result, that that's what I mean by the motion. No probation, no parole, or a period of probation, a period of parole, or a period of a suspended sentence is what we mean by disability, period of disability.
You're not talking about not being able to carry a concealed gun.
Yeah, just theoretically, a guy may not be able to carry a concealed weapon.
It may have to be, by the way, specific. I think it may be better just to list those.
I was thinking mostly of some of those sentences, a certain period of time, you know, let out maybe a couple of years, and the rest of it was, and it's time to start on this hearing and hand it out of jail.
Yeah.
You still haven't, as far as I'm concerned, fulfilled his obligation, so it's the first period of parole, then the time to start.
It should be the end of his parole or the end of his suspension.
No time inside jail.
Well, I'll move that as a conceptual amendment, even though we don't do that often in this committee.
Conceptual
amendment. And if we determine that disability is all right, but it bothers me because that
could
be one of the other disabilities.
Okay, is there any objection to the amendment on page 8, line 23-24? No objection, amendment's adopted.
Okay, turn to page 12. You'll see the greatest and former amendments, and that's line 23-24, which you asked me to redraft. And this is a mitigating factor in the way it's read. The defendant is just authorized to attack, detect, or apprehend other persons who have committed the offense with him.
What line are you on?
23-24.
So this is put in mitigation. This is the Danforth extort the testimony, get the guy to school on that.
Did we adopt this?
Yes, we did. Yeah, you did. I just wanted to point
you to the thing draft amendment.
Yeah. I get worried when Carpenter gets a dictionary.
I had some second thoughts about this amendment. You know, one of the things, Ed, maybe you can speak to this, there's these the people they always get to be informants are usually guys who either had real heavy prior criminal activity themselves, and that's why their informants are trying to bail themselves out, and they're probably involved in the criminal activity at the present. They're just not getting caught, but they're informing on somebody else, and they're probably just lying half the time. Who knows? I was just reading this article today about the study they did on these people who were hardened criminals, and they just, lying was, that's one of the things that they could define what a criminal was. Lying is a way of life with them. I mean, that's just their system of communication, just like other people don't lie. And I think that that's what a lot of the informants end up being, is people like that. And they're just as bad as the other people trying to throw in jail, and I don't know that we ought to have some provision written in for them to mitigate.
But we're not talking about informants here at all. We're talking about guys already caught, aren't we? And we're asking him if he wants to own up to it or go to recover the property.
Yeah.
We'll give him some credit before the judge for doing that.
It covers
the letters. He won't get anything but talent on anybody that actually.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I suppose if I were a prosecutor and the defense counsel were trying to get a hearing and then get mitigation or sentence and using the subsection 12, this is really a reply to Terry here. I'm going to get you some old Pinafoto films of Joseph McCarthy with his staff lawyers reading into his ears all the time.
Don't, that was not me, I'm not free. That was Bob's not the church.
Yeah, Bob's not the church. Okay, well, there's the saving grace
there.
Anyway, Mr. Chairman, as I started to say, if I were a prosecutor and a defense counsel came into a sentencing hearing, and he was putting on his factors of mitigation before the judge with evidence, I was putting on my factors of aggravation, and he tried to come in on 12 and said that his client had assisted authorities and so forth, my immediate response would be, Your Honor, the statute says who had committed the offense with him. These people have not been brought to trial yet. They haven't been indicted. And I will take the position that argue for the state that they should be convicted. We have no guarantee that they will be convicted. If they have not been convicted yet, and they may not be convicted in the future, therefore, under the law, they have never committed the offense with him. And he could easily be a dirty, rotten liar. And therefore, you cannot take this into account because the statute specifically says who had committed the offense with him. So I don't think that your problem of the guy who's going to lie is a problem.
Okay, well, it is somewhat minimal.
Well, I think probably, I'm not really about this word. I would not rather just spend it with a defense attorney to argue before the judge that if he said the defendant was, well, he was set out and point out whether the stolen property was, but the judge ought to know that he was cooperating and tried to make some efforts to...
This was interesting, Brown, for the prosecution to actually for the defense. Ever seen that before?
It's like I'm getting more and more that way.
It's catching.
I'm getting to deal you up there on the floor.
All right. We're waiting for your ruling here.
Mr. Chairman, the way it's written right now, I believe Mr. Brown's analysis would be correct, since we have the presumption of innocence, and if you the assistant authorities to detect or apprehend other persons who had committed the offense, I mean, that's the problem that develops there, is that he technically hasn't committed the offense until he's been convicted of it. And
you wanted it
to actually, in that respect, I think Mr. Dankworth's language is better, if that's what you're trying to
read. If you were defending me, but it would seem like me, that if you just...
I'd charge you with wrong.
No, but you... that really got you. You said, but if you... you would tell me that if you do tell him where the stolen property is, that will be something I can argue and actually use your son.
Yeah.
If you want to...
I would go for broader language. I think maybe the committee voted for narrower language.
There is a class of informants in the criminal milieu. There's a certain class that are used in some cases that are just really probably some of the worst people that ever come, you know, as far as sociopaths, are the worst people that come into the criminal courtroom a lot of times. And that's why I hate to see those people getting a break in order to get the more intelligent or smarter criminals, so to speak. But it's those people a lot of times who can't help themselves from committing crimes, and as far as they're the people who should be separated from society, and in essence, you're giving them a break.
Yeah, this restricts it.
Well, if we were talking about reporting informants, that's one thing. We're talking about a guy here that's been convicted of a crime, and we're trying to give him some credit for trying to be a half-decent guy about it. And he's got a call, and that's why I'm saying he aided the authorities, and we've got some property. We're not talking about an informant that's been used as a witness.
Okay,
that's
an
entirely different problem. But I'll go along with the defendant.
I'll go along
with
the way it is.
Let's move on.
Okay,
line
11. Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I have a question for Doug. I'm trying to remember the sequence of events here. Kind of rummy. I got into a sleeping version last night. Sleeping version. Huh? Well.
That happened.
You lose your sense of humor that once every 2 months and start worrying about it. Anyway, what sequence am I trying to remember, Deb? And the thing that applies here is whether or not, is this applicable at all, the problem of the guy who is, okay, you want to encourage people to provide evidence so that we can detect and prosecute and get convictions, accurate convictions for crimes. Okay, we have the guy who's been arrested, we've got the goods on him, we'll be bringing him to trial. We decide we want to try to bring him to trial now, or ask defense counsel for a waiver of speedy trial or something like that, with whatever's best. Then how do we get complicated in some kind of a time problem here? That is, commonly with the guy who cooperated or as the informant, be brought to trial first or afterwards. I'm conjuring up the situation. I've done this as defense counsel where you're under indictment presently for this offense, aren't you, Mr. Jones? Oh, yes, I am. Do you expect any favorable treatment to and so forth? Well, none has been promised me. I say, no, do you expect any? Well, none has been promised me. The prosecution objects, and I cite Whitney versus State, and we go back in, and I still ask my question.
Once you pass this, what Mr. Brown is saying is you're effectively giving a defense attorney a point to trying to teach an informant understand it. Because now he has an incentive to testify because of this section that he doesn't have in law
that
before.
That may be all right. So
yeah,
maybe
all right, but you are opening it up to that for informant to be cross-examined.
I suppose the end question is, what kind of a problem do we cause in the administration of justice?
Well, that's the other problem.
If you're sitting in the DA's office and you're trying to schedule trials, work with a trial calendar, I suppose that if you were getting a plea out, or going to trial with the informant, this would be even worse. You'd be in a catch-22. If you brought him to trial first, then he's convicted, or you take his plea first, then that can be used in impeachment against your informing witness when you're getting the other guys tried. On the other hand, if you wait and you have your informant who's in the group tried last, then he's under indictment for the entire period, and every defense counsel is going to go through the sequence of questioning that I just did.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes, when you move to sever, you can also move to sever and ask for an in some limited instances, you can get, if you get a severance of counts or a severance of parties, you can get one person tried before the other one, and I can't pick it off the top of my head, but I can imagine a situation where, because of the language here, the person who wanted to use the benefit of this language would have to be tried after the other person, but because pursuant to a motion to sever and an order by the court, you'd have to be tried first and you're going to end up with a mess. I think maybe procedurally you're better off to delete the whole section.
Wait a minute, Doug. Aren't you drawing something? Let's go all the way through how does that compare to the current situation? Maybe that's not much better or worse than what we've got now anyway.
I just wanted
to get to the logical conclusion and be done with it, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I know. Well, it may be 7 o'clock. And I'd really get the logical conclusion at a later date.
Yeah, you, like, after we get everything done, then we'll go back and have the baby get
together.
We'll let these weeds grow in the background.
I've got a big question mark on
Mr. Chairman, what we're dealing with here is the ramifications on criminal procedure is what we're really dealing with. And criminal procedure being separate and distinct from the substance of criminal law. There are some problems.
Delete it, but Fred doesn't, so obviously we don't.
Mr. Dankworth's language might be the more appropriate.
Okay, we'll come back to it if anybody wants to know.
On lines 11 and 12, there was something that Doug brought up at the last meeting. Same page, 12, lines 11 and 12. This was provoked the crime to a significant degree. We put, except in the case of a crime described in 41-400-470, which is sexual offenses. Right. And now that we've required force, specifically for sexual assault too, it's appropriate. You don't want to say, well, the reason he committed the offense is because the person was wearing a tight dress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you need to...
You weren't here last time. We suggested that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
Can we have a...
I'll move the language in there.
Okay, the motion to adopt language in line 11 and 12. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? There's no objection. Amendment adopted.
Okay, if you turn to page 14, there's something missing on page 14 that used to be in the bill you had before, and that said imposing less than the prescribed penalty. There's a provision in existing law which says you can impose less than the prescribed penalty, except in certain instances. We have included in the previous draft, and then when Doug and I sat down, we realized that it was totally unnecessary under the criminal codes, as we specifically have presumptive sentencing. We have specific things that say you can impose less than the prescribed penalty. So it's out.
Do
you feel that the provision back here that you addressed earlier...
Yeah, prison not suspended. It's page 11.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for. Okay, there. Okay. If we delete that section...
Which one?
The one you just said is deleted on 14.
You do more fun of
that. Yeah.
Can it be argued that G on lines 14 and 15 of 8 doesn't have a problem? That is, can it be argued that says nothing in this section limits the discretion of the sentencing judge in any manner except as specifically provided?
Yeah.
Couldn't somebody say, well, there's nothing that grants a judge discretion as to other methods of suspension or reduction of sentence unless we specifically say so? Are you taking away from the judge the power to reduce a sentence for a first felon when the interests of justice provide it?
Well, we don't have any sentence. We don't have any minimum sentences for first felons. That's the important point. We say 0 to 3.
I know, but what is the language of the section you're taking out? What does it read?
Okay. Well, except in the case of murder or rape, the court may, upon conviction, when in its opinion, the facts and circumstances make the minimum penalty provided in this title manifestly too severe, impose a lesser penalty, either a fine or imprisonment or both. Well, there are no minimum penalties other than presumptive sentences or for murder. So you don't need it. Originally, I never thought it would be in, and then
I suppose the related question is this. Is there authority here for the situation where we do not have a presumptive nor a murder one or two situation, and you're coming back into court, and the judge is exercising his authority to reduce a sentence because of a showing on evidence after the guy's been in jail for 2 years?
I think it's covered under the section you gave me.
Yeah, but that doesn't say what it is.
Well, I think
that whatever does not limit his discretion, but where is the authority? You know, legislatures provide jurisdiction to courts, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well,
where is the authority for a judge to reduce a sentence or even...
There is none right now after 60 days.
But where's his authority to reduce the sentence that he's already given?
Is that what you're saying?
But wait. I don't see, Fred, I know what you're getting at, but I don't see it. I think what this is also saying is that, you know, the first offender is... Okay, here's the other thing. We say you could be presumptively sentenced. We say for second offenders, you must be presumptively sentenced to, say, 4 years.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing here that says that the court, the judge can't also say you have to pay a fine. So you may singly in combination do the following. I may presumptively sentence you for 4 years, plus you shall pay a fine.
No, the only thing I'm concerned about is does anywhere, are we providing, are we saying he doesn't have the power, in case, say, the first felon, not murdered, where a sentence has been given to, say, 5 years.
Yeah.
And then a year and a half later, there's a motion made for a modification of the sentence.
Well, Fred, currently under 35B, you can only modify it within 60 days.
Yeah.
There is a bill, and unless
you can live with it anyway. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, some judges hold to it real strictly. There's currently a bill in Senate rules right now that would give jurisdiction beyond 60 days in limited circumstances. But right now, the way most judges construe it is that there's a Rule 53 that says you can expand the time limits within the criminal rules if there's a showing of manifest injustice, and that's the only way that the courts I've been involved with will expand the 60-day rule of 35B to allow modification of sentence.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I guess it's not a big issue here.
I think it's commentary. We can talk.
It's time for us to be finished.
Page 15. Page 15 is a new subsection there.
We're going all the way to Barry. Hang in there, Barry.
Oh, there's a couple more after Barry.
Yeah, we got some stuff. We got things never heard of before.
We're at 5 o'clock.
Okay, on line 8 and a half. Or line 7 and then line 8.
Oh.
What we're doing is we're modifying the probation section to say that one of the conditions of probation is community work. Can be community work, yeah. It's not a, it's, I don't even say it's a substantive change at all.
That's not a big
okay, and then
require a motion? I don't think so.
No.
When do we have a motion?
I'll have a motion. I'll move that.
Motion to adopt section 14 of the bill, page 15, line 8 and 9.
What if there's something that was not in the other sentences?
Well, this
is the
one
that I just handed out.
Any objection to the amendment? No objection to the amendment. Do you object?
Well, I just wanted to have the amendment.
Oh, amendment is page 15, line 7 and 8, section 14, 12, 55, 100, is amended by adding a new subsection to read for to perform community work.
And that's a condition of probation, one of the conditions of probation.
It's not in the statute.
Yeah. Okay, is there any objection to that? There's no objection to the amendment stuff. Okay, Mrs. Rudd.
There's a typo on page 14, line 26. Should we not previously have been convicted?
Has not
yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Not previously been convicted.
I noted that, and the grammar there, and on the next page is bad. And I presume that that's just all taken care of by somebody who...
What would you suggest?
Well, for example, on page 15 now, where it says second felony conviction means that the defendant has previously been. It should be that the defendant previously has been convicted.
Previously has been?
Yes. Similarly, where Lisa just made the correction, we should take the previously out of the... it should read that.
Has not been previously?
Correct.
Has not been previously.
Don't put it in the middle of the verb.
Don't put it before or after.
And on what about on page 15 on 6?
Yes.
Wonderful. Okay.
May I ask a technical question?
Yeah.
I don't really want to become known as the grammarian of the 10th legislature. Doesn't somebody...
Yeah, the problem is that this stuff we have been just working on as a staff basis. We haven't sent it to Legislative Affairs yet. So Legislative Affairs is going to, when Jim gets it, that's his bag, and he'll
It's not just him there, so there's one lady up there that's been there forever, and she doesn't let bills come out unless they are the right punctuation, right style.
So it's
really
not necessary to do that.
Well, sometimes she does. Sometimes
no, I think it is. I think it's important.
I think it's helpful. To correct things on the floor, Larry. You're not the only one.
I think it's helpful when people bring it up. It's just increases that.
In that section 12, in that section 12, on page 12, that we went to. Yeah, the defendant assisted the authorities to retract. I mean, you just want to go. That's bad grammar. We're going back to that.
Yeah. In detecting or apprehending.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Is there anything else anybody wants to bring up in this before we go to the amendments? No, we'll just here. We're going to go to these two amendments now.
Other than the section 12, we have to
use now. Just the things that Terry's gone over.
What section 12?
All right, let's go to the amendment.
Okay, the two amendments, Mr. Chairman. One is the first two pages were signed off by the committee already. Barry and I rewrote them. This classification of offenses to, because it was grammarly, is that the right word?
Grammarly.
I like it.
Anyway, there was some bad grammar, and we condensed it, made it better. I don't think there's no policy changes at all in that rewrite. Maybe you might want to take a minute to look through it.
Just make sure there are no hookers in bills.
And is this the form of what Department of Law?
This was well, for example, the Department of Law defined what a Class C felony was, and we decided that.
Well, that's you know, the interesting thing, of course, is they did on this redraft, but in 206, the governor's bill, they did define what
Yeah. You know, I knew that.
This was originally.
Following is misspelled on my. Following.
Yeah.
The reason we have to catch those things is
because
all of them are on automatic typewriters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless we play
out problems. Because we're switching mags here. Our staff has been typing all this, and so legislative affairs
exactly
do their own.
You won't
they have their own system up there. It's pretty inviolable.
Nope. You're not going to take the mag
card at home. No. Ann, is this okay with that? Yeah. This was your amendment.
Yeah, this looks fine to me. Dan was the one that had originally written it. To me, this looks better.
Being an old legislative affairs drafter.
Have you ever heard of the Carpinetti little antitrust law?
Okay, does anybody have any problem with that? We've already adopted that, so we don't need
that. The third page is this, which, let me find out where it would go on the bill here. It's to community work. There were some people felt that there should be a, it's not necessarily a definition, there should be some reference to what community work was.
In page 6, line 1.
So we go, page 6, line 1. And then on page 5, line 23, you should have to put a parenthesis after work.
Are you talking about the center graph?
Yeah.
Oh,
that goes. You're just plugging in this definition of community work.
Yeah. That basically came, that's a very succinct version of a three-paragraph thing.
It says facilities and education is the last word.
Or education.
What does education include? Education?
Improve public education. I don't know what it means either, but it was in...
You mean, of course, on armed robbery at your local...
Yeah, well, there could be an example. The example being if one of us perhaps gets...
I'll give you the Andy Warwick. Andy Warwick one. Remember when he painted the human Semitic people when we were in high school, painted all over the high school building and they made him go into class?
I refuse to answer on the grounds that it makes Andy look primitive.
What
did they make him do? Oh, I can't remember. Something that improved public education.
What did they paint?
I can't remember. Something like whoopee, we finally got out of this dumper.
That's our former commissioner of administration. You should hear the stories we've got on the present commissioner of administration.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We have to have a motion.
All the fifth
motion
chair
down of the definition of community work.
Page 6, line 1.5, the new subsection B to 1265055.
Mr. Kerr.
Did somebody stick in the or before improve? And then,
I did. You and
okay.
Me, Larry.
Okay.
No, I stuck it in my draft. I can bring it up.
Or improve?
Or improve.
Oh, okay.
And then you really need a...
And I had or in there and took it out.
Or the last or should be an and.
Okay.
Why?
Well,
it's because you just want to use thumb screws, Larry.
You mean they have to improve all of those things and education?
Well,
that's the problem, aren't you?
Then, if you aren't going to do that, if you aren't going to have the improve apply in that manner, then you're going to have to go to semicolon.
Yeah, that's
doesn't suck. I don't understand what you mean.
Well, it's sort of hard to figure out how to write that in a succinct manner without...
If you want it to be or education, then it's got to read, community work includes work on projects designed to reduce or eliminate environmental damage.
Semicolon.
That's public health, semicolon. Or improve public lands, forests, parks, roads, highways, facilities, or education.
Okay, that's
the way it should be. That's right. I moved that language. And then I moved that language. Ask me to get that. But objection? Sure.
You're a one-man committee there.
That's it.
Okay, now
we got to move the bill out while you're out of the room.
I'm talking to some girlfriend here.
You too.
I'll never forget about Beverly. What's your name?
Okay, now we get to something called good time, and also how we apply this to Corolla. Now, what I'm handing out now is the pages from the governor's bill, the governor's presumptive sentencing bill on good time in Corolla, which I think is a very good work.
We've already gone through that. Well, this is actually, I think this is the last remaining policy issue.
Yeah, this is. And good time. And good time.
That's what I've heard about four times in the last.
Now you guys actually.
The last.
You're only a month late. I mean, it was all an imaginary date that I just picked up and said it'll be on the floor of the house by the third one. How can you calculate it?
Okay, let me first just summarize what this is. Again, this is directly from the governor's bill. Section 3 deals with persons eligible for parole. Now, the only changes that the governor recommended was the sections on presumptive sentencing, which I crossed out. We would just put this,
in the one-point gun.
And then we would have to make references to murder. In other words, you're eligible for parole after you serve your minimum murder
term. How would that read? And who is not in prison in accordance with?
The specific section.
E and C or E and F of each of those three.
125C2, 125C3, 125D2.
The ones that are subject to presumptive sentencing.
And also the minimums for murder 1 and 2.
Yeah. Okay, so that would be murder 1 and 2 presumptive term.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the next section, subsection B, says that when you're released under the good time provision after your presumptive sentence is served, okay, you shall be placed on parole for the period specified, and basically subject to the conditions of the parole officer. Now you gotta just remember that section because we'll come back to that as we discuss good time. Now the good time provision follows in section 4, a very simple one. Simply says, you shall receive 1 day for every 2 days of good conduct served.
This is going too fast.
Okay, we need a second week.
Yeah, well, I'm obviously...
Okay, let me back up to the subsection B. Now, I remember having read this 9 million years ago, just barely, but what is the substantive law change of B?
What is the substantive...
We're adding something. What
well, okay, the existing statute says...
The existing statute is right above there.
No, the
well,
existing statute is above.
Let me give you the existing statute. Yeah. The existing statute is 3320.040. No, we don't have parole. No, it's not true. We don't have parole for presumptive sentences. No, no parole.
How come you wasn't giving me two of every
sure? See, that's the important point.
Well, what's the difference now between this B and the existing law?
Okay, I'm looking. Existing law 3320.040.
Okay, oh, I was reading 020.
Yeah.
Makes sense. So.
Yeah. One. I think what it says is that some people that were not subject to parole status will be subject to parole status under the revision. Now, I don't particularly...
Are you sure you have to say it?
Sure. I don't like it.
Well, no, okay, you don't like B.
I don't like it because we're delegating authority.
Right. Well, the,
we're making regulations.
I'm not recommending you adopt B. I think you should just simply keep 3320.04.
I agree.
You know, but okay. The thing is, the good time provision is the important one. That's like 20 to 25.
Well, then we don't scratch B here.
Yeah. Well,
I'm going to move that. Yeah.
Well, this. Okay.
Why don't you hold off till we go through the whole thing?
Okay, my reason is that the section B from the governor's bill leaves it up to the rules and regulations of the corrections. The present 040 gives you a specific formula set forth in the statutes. There it is, you know.
I don't recommend keeping. I just simply 40. Okay.
So anyway, after we get through the explanation, I'll be moving to delete B and keep the original 040.
And also, by the way, on line 12, on page 12, line 26 through the next page, line 4, I don't recommend you include either, because this was written 2 years ago or a year ago, and it was saying basically to the Division of Corrections, come up with some rules as to infractions, of, you know, in prison discipline and how to affect good time. They come up with those rules. I think when considering the good time provision, all you need is subsection A. No, so you don't need B or C, you know. Let me point out, the one nice thing about this good time provision is the fact that it eliminates the, under existing law, if you look at the existing statute, it's pretty difficult to determine exactly how much good time you have. The other thing is that this proposal would eliminate the good time provision of 3320.020, which is the discretionary good time. We'd only have one section on good time, it'd be one for two, and the one statute really crystal clear, and this was given thought by, you know, this is the governor's bill that everybody was supposedly so happy with, and that's why we came back in with it.
Why one for two? Why not one for three?
Well, you could, obviously you could make, you know, any figure you want. What you're saying here is that a one for three good time provision, I think, is frankly somewhat strict, and I'll tell you why. You're talking about the person on presumptive sentencing that is sentenced to 10 years in jail. This is saying that the after he serves 7 years, he shall be out. In other words, it basically requires him to serve 66% of his time in jail. I think that's, frankly, when I was originally thinking about this, I was thinking of the 50-50 type of thing, cutting his sentence down by half. That was, I think, what the subcommittee's original proposal was. I think it's stricter. I mean, my recommendation would be probably to make it tighter. But since this was the governor's bill, and everybody, again, liked the governor's bill, we came in with this as a working draft.
Okay. And, well, the question I had now, originally when we talked about said, I'll lose parole if we get away with parole. It was not intended. It was a good argument, actually, to do away with parole, period. You get two for one. And that way a guy knows the day he's going to get out, and he behaves himself. You know, this was the argument for the two to one. And if you go in there and behave yourself, you don't need a lot of extra guards on you because you're earning good time. But you can predict the day you walk in, the day you'll walk out if you behave yourself. And none of this getting in for a month and then getting parole the rest of the term. If you put a Bible under your arm and go to church, you're allowed to get out a little earlier and you start playing games in the prison so you'll get the guards to think you're really rehabilitated.
Yeah, it eliminates this.
All that was in there, and that's where the 2-to-1 or giving guys credit for good times came along. Now, if I'm assuming here, and I believe I'm right, it's where we're dealing with presumptive sentencing, that's what we're doing here. There is no parole.
That's correct. Again, the point that you just made about the Bible under their arms, if you look at 3320.020, that's essentially your Bible under your arm provision. That would be repealed. In other words, you would just have that provision that says it shall be one for two, and that's it. If you are presumptively sentenced, then you go in that you could predict the day you're going to go out because you're not assuming you're good. You know, because you're not going to be subject to parole. It's just simply one for two. And I think that's fairly strict. It requires you to serve 66% of your sentence, whereas now under existing law, you could get out of it for a third.
It has a real deciding effect, I would suspect. I'm not a phenologist, but I would imagine it makes a prisoner a little easier to handle if he knows that he smuggles in some marijuana or whatever, you know, breaks the rules that it can cost him good time, you know. So he might just refrain from doing a lot of that foolishness and tearing up the place and riding and stuff if it costs him good time.
Correction has adopted regulations on how to revoke good time.
Yeah.
Wow. Leaving it up to regulations always bothers me.
Yeah.
If my presumptive sentence is 10 years,
yes,
and I mitigate it to the maximum, and I get
five.
Then I can good time it to the maximum.
Two and a half. No, not 2.5. I get confused about that, too. See, it says you've got to serve 2 for every 1, so it means you've got to serve about 3.5 before you get out. Because if you get... You know, in other words, you serve 2.5, you would only get 1 3/4
yeah.
credit.
1 1/4.
Yeah, 1 1/4 would be enough. It's pretty close to like 3 years. 3 years, 2 or 3 months.
10/3, 3.3.
It's 66% of your time.
It would be 3.33 years.
Yeah, 66%. And whereas currently you could be released, your third time felon, you could be released after a third under existing law. Where it's saying now you got to serve 2/3. Under this, which I thought was somewhat strict, you know, myself.
Too bad.
But Larry, there's no question that you're just giving something to prisoners, but you're getting something back. And I think that's going to be what the penal system's all over.
I wanted to
see if they recognize this time.
I wanted to see if it was somehow the old section 10 was based upon the term of your sentence.
Yes.
Right? And I thought, I wondered, and the best you could get was on a 10-year. Sentence. If the sentence is more than 10 years, then you've got 10 days for each month.
Yes, and it's like one
thing.
One for three.
That's essentially one for three. Okay, but in addition to that, you had parole.
Yeah, so.
And you were eligible for parole after serving.
So you found you dropped the 1 and 2 because you're bound from off getting your parole. But you're taking, you're working off the maximum good time that you could get under the old provision of parole.
Okay, but the other thing you're not considering is the other thing you're not considering though is the good time that's allowed under 20, which would be repealed. Which is that, you know, I'm going to Bible school.
Yeah, that's the good guy in the eyes of the corrections.
Yeah, meritorious good guy.
Right. Now the proposal, this is what last year, you know, came out from the Judicial Council and the governor was to say, okay, we're going to have good time, it's going to be one for two, and we're not going to have a meritorious good time. And that would be the, you know, basically what I guess I'm recommending to adopt.
May I ask a question about how this will work if this passes? Okay, then, this computation of good time will apply to all prisoners.
Yes.
Prisoners who are first felons who are not murder one or murder two will also have the parole option available.
That's correct.
Murder one, murder two, and presumptive sentence people, the only reduction that they'll have available at all at the end of the section.
That's
right?
Correct. And they'll know when they're getting out.
I think the commission looked at the, you know, in 661 as originally introduced, there was provisions to deal with the whole question of parole system and everything.
Just to clarify that, it was never
So the commission attempted to deal with it.
Yeah,
but the whole parole system, I think, is a whole huge area that needs a separate examination. I mean, we're biting off a lot to take the criminal code and sentencing without trying to revise the parole system in the state of Alaska at the same time. But I think by doing this, we're not at least locking these people into that whole parole system, you know, that are under presumptive terms. And listening to those weird cases we hear on the commission and stuff and the judicial council sentencing thing, it was amazing. You'd have somebody was sentenced to 15 years with 10 suspended, and then they got in there, and even if there wasn't an appeal, then they had, like say, got two systems of good time, plus then they were up for parole, and it's such a complicated maze that it was meaningless to look at what the guy was sentenced to. It had no relation, and it confuses everybody, because right now under present law, what they sentence people to looks impressive, but what they actually serve is a totally different story. I mean, it's totally erratic, too. I think that's probably the
it
second
depends
thing.
As much upon the prison administration as it does.
I think that's the second thing that's wrong. Not only is that it's very misleading as to what they really do serve, but that, you know, I don't know how they figure out who's getting what. Larry?
I agree with what you said.
This is a lot simpler.
And this is tightening it up by making it liberal.
I can't accept that in terms of looking at just in terms of what we're drafting. And the way we're drafting it is we're saying, this is the hypothetical. You have committed armed robbery. You have not caused an injury to anyone, but you were armed with a gun. You did use the gun. Your previous offense was joyriding, or your previous offense was theft. You will be sentenced, if you're presumptively sentenced, to a 10-year imprisonment. Now, let's not talk about whether the guy could be aggravated or mitigated. Let's just assume he's in a presumptive sentence of 10 years. We're saying to that person, you must serve a minimum of 6 years and 8 months in jail. And I think that if you look at what that person would be getting today under those circumstances, I think they would be what they were serving, exactly, I think you'd be extremely, extremely surprised in terms of how much higher it would be.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Well, okay. Then I don't think, if you wouldn't be surprised, then I don't see how this is, you know, it maybe it's not going as far as you would perhaps want to, but it's certainly tightening up for second, third offenders.
You're doing exactly what I said, then. You're tightening it up by making it liberal. You're eliminating all these other remissions, but you, the one you're leaving is a big one.
Well, he's right, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Carpenter is right.
Right, right. The line isn't.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the committee could adopt 1 and 3 or 1 and 4, but when you get over, you know, we figured out the numbers of it. When you get over around 1 and 3, you're not much different than it is right now, or 1 and 4. 1 and 3, I guess, yes, 1 and 3 is about where it is right now, if you figure out the numbers on.
They don't adopt it after federal, the most that was going to this one.
Chairman, I favor the section now that I've got all the pieces together, all the different laws that apply and explain.
Which section?
The computation good time. It would not break my heart if somebody else over my vote prevailed with 1 for 3. So you can go start counting your votes if you want to. It's not a big number. 1 for 3 would probably be good policy too. But the thing that I like that we've done here, and it really hadn't occurred to me.
Yeah.
It really hadn't occurred to me, Mr. Chairman. What we've done is, and I keep hoping the committee is listening, because once in a while I say something I think is important, about every 10 seconds.
And how do we know?
Yeah. Think about this for a minute, and this is just the result of what we've been doing. Maybe other people have talked about this, but I haven't thought about it this way. What we've done by doing it this way, whether we adopt 1 for 2 or you were to prevail with 1 for 3 and then here on the floor or something, is that your parole officers are only going to be dealing with first offenders. That means that your parole officer is going to be dealing with the only people that maybe they stand any chance at all of doing any good for. Because I don't think parole officers, parole helps anybody if he's a second or third offender. The guys I've represented and the fellows I've known or went to school with, you know, the whole deal of playing off the parole officer is a bloody joke. And maybe he stands a chance of being able to do something with regard to that first offender. And if the bill passes this way with either 1 for 2 or 1 for 3, parole will be limited to only the first offenders. I think it's a good idea. And it didn't occur to me if that was the way it was working.
I think parole should be eliminated. I mean, that's what we're doing.
I like I said before, I think it is a big question. And and that maybe you could just jump and say we're going to have a good time for everything and there's no parole or whatever, but the parole board is doing a lot of work now, and they've got some problems with it, and maybe they're rectifying a lot. But
anyone here ever sent through a parole board?
I've heard about it. I understand the problems. I went to a big thing last year and listened to this guy that came up from the federal parole board, and everything. The federal parole board had been problems, but one thing I decided, it's a whole big another area, and I don't think we just addressed it for 15 minutes, 1 hour, 2 minutes. But let's go through. We reviewed this, so let's go back through it now and make any amendments that we want.
What was I going to do earlier?
Okay. We talked about deleting subsection B there in 180.
Yeah, I'm going to move to delete B and go with the original. What was it? The
3320-040.
Oh, 040?
040.
Okay.
Just delete B. Just
and then not repeal 040.
Yeah.
Yes,
which one are we keeping?
Listen.
That's this here?
No, you
can
pull it.
Where does this repeal that?
Okay.
Okay. I don't think you're bound by the repealage at all. I mean, it's just the fact that I'm giving you the spill on.
All right. Well, yeah, but
Yes.
Are the rest of
you? I'm deleting the repealer of 040 and I'm deleting B. So 040
okay.
Is fine. All right. So the effect of the amendment, Mr. Chairman, would be that we would not have the discretion given to the department in the way described in the new B.
Okay.
And there'd be a firm formula set out in the statute, the old 40. I think that's much better.
Okay, the motion before us is on page 12, delete lines 14 through 18. And on the next page, on line 6, delete the number 33.20040. Is there any objection to the amendment?
That you're deleting 040?
Yeah. So in other words,
we're deleting 040 in and dumping B.
So that would keep 040 in existing law.
The reason for it, Ed, is I don't want to, the B in the governor's bill would turn it more over to the board and regulations and the parole officer, and 040 has a straight formula they have to follow, and I think that's much better.
What does 040 mean? It's a prison service term. The term for which he was going to select good time. That will be released unconditionally if there remains less than 180 days to serve.
That means it's not subject to parole. There's no restrictions on his release when there's only 180 days left of the good time.
They don't parole you when you only have, 6 months left to serve. You're shaking your head no.
They don't get put on parole.
No, I'm saying yes.
Huh? I didn't hear your answer, Ann.
They don't put you on formal probation when you just have 180 days left to serve when you release on parole. They don't set up a parole program and give you a parole. The one interesting thing, though, is if you might be on probation after you serve a term of imprisonment, you might go on unconditional release because you have less than 180 days to serve, and then you might start on a program of probation as it happens, which is kind of strange.
Is there any objections to the amendment? Okay, if there's no
there may be some problems with the original 040, but
yeah.
The proposed meeting is not as though it's
Carpenter. I moved the 3 instead of 2 on line 24.
Just, I guess, for the record.
I'll make an amendment to amendment, change it to 1.
What that do? You're going 1 for 1.
I'm
going one
just
going
to vote against three. But I think that's extreme enough. That's what I want to say.
The effect of that is that they have to spend 75% there instead of 66. Here's what I think we're looking at.
That's correct. If you had a 4-year sentence, you would have to get out after, you would get out after 3 years.
It's easier to think of that way.
What?
Well,
no, it is. It's very difficult. I was so,
prisoner argument. It's easier for him to figure his own good time that way.
Mr. Carpenter, you're
33.5%.
We've debated it already.
One of the reasons for a presumptive sentence, and after we've dealt with the questions of mitigating and aggravating, we come up with a sentence. And I think that one of our goals is to have the sentence be what we say it is. So we're removing parole and the Mickey Mouse good time, we're leaving only one thing, real good time. And we're leaving it, I think we should examine why we're leaving that at all, why it even exists. Why doesn't the presumptive sentence stand, period?
like, you know, that's what we're talking about. Dr. Sentence. So we have to examine only why we're leaving the real good time. And we're doing it, in my view, to motivate good behavior. So let's take a look at the felon. And let's figure whether he would be more motivated if he was going to get 1 for 2 or 1 for 3. There's going to be no difference in his behavior. To the degree that he's going to be motivated, he'll be as strongly motivated when he sees 1 for 3 as he will be for 1 for 2. So what's the policy reason for making it 1 for 2? Now, 1 for 3 balances better with what existed previously in the existing Section 10, where I see no reason for, I don't know what the argument can be for 1 for 2.
Well, the first part of your argument is that there's not much difference between 1 for 3 and 1 for 4.
Well, no, I'm
one
arguing
for two.
Effectively.
Yeah.
Well, what's the goal
of
having it at all?
Yeah, the whole purpose of good time is to have some kind of incentive system to make people behave in correctional institutions instead of beating them up and whatever else you have to do, and also to maybe get them into the idea that the whole Fogel plan thing went and said what you really need to do is have certainty, not all this uncertainty. Uncertainty doesn't have people learn anything. What they need to do is learn that, you know, if they do something, they get something in return. And that's a better system just from inside the prison. Is a lot better system of how to manage people in there. It's less, can be less costly in the long run and less prison riots and what have you. And also, this is obviously something could improve, but maybe it helps rehabilitate. But the biggest argument was just in terms of prison management. And you have to have something that seems worthwhile to people. Now, you're saying that if I offer you to work 50 cents an hour, you know, it doesn't increase your incentive if I offer you more. And I would agree if I offered you 52 cents an hour instead of 50 cents an hour, you might say there's no such difference. Which, the only thing I could say to that, then maybe we ought to go to 1 for 1 so that there is a large enough incentive. That'll make a lot of difference between what your proposal is. You know, if you don't think 1 for 2 is enough to get incentive, then maybe we ought to go to 1 for 1.
Well, that isn't what I said. I said it would be due by the felon.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you give him 1 for 1, that's going to be measurable to him.
I maintain that the felon who never will know of this discussion or how we voted or acted on this provision, that if our goal is
except
to motivate,
one sitting here,
when his motivation to behave while he's in the clamor will be just as strong when he is informed that he gets 1 for 3 as if he were informed he got 1 for 2. That's what I'm saying. And therefore, because we're presuming a sentence for a crime, and that's what the public really wants us to do, we have no other motivation to reduce his sentence other than to motivate him to be good.
Yeah,
therefore, I say 1 to 3.
I'd like to hear what Ed.
I think Larry made an awfully good argument concerning presumptive sentencing if we got it down. You know what? He asked the question, what are we doing this for? Other than what you argued, and you have been right with Larry did. And that's to motivate this guy to kind of behave in the 7th century. We're not trying to make it easier for him. We just want to motivate him to behave. Well, I think 1 to 4 or 5 or 6 kind of gets it in how it's more fun to be bad than it is to get that little bit of time off. But I think when we talk about you give me 1 day off or 2 days a week off for being good that week, it's a pretty good motivation and instead of 4 days or 3 days. So I guess the policy question is to whether we want to go ahead and say, hey, you know, you've got 2 years full. If you'll behave yourself, we'll give you 1 day off for every 3 days you serve. Might be just as much motivation that guy is trying to give him too much time. I think I would tend to support the amendment on the motion.
Yeah.
I go along with Larry's question. Talking to numbers, there's only 8% increase over what we have now.
He's still in the capital.
Yeah.
We're in Sunderland.
Oh,
it's a building in there.
Well, it is.
Explain why you want it. Good. Let me try to explain why you want the good time number fixed. And I don't believe the arguments in terms of letting the guy be good. You should, you know, if you only want the guy to behave, then make it 1 to 10. There's no reason why it has to be 1 to 2. You know, 1 to 2, 1 to 3, 1 to 4. 1 to 10 is sufficient because he'll be good. You know, to get that extra credit. The reason you're doing it is simply because you have to decide how many years you want these people to be in jail. And the presumptive sentencing thing, I think, is radical in the sense that it does require that you must serve certain time in jail. And it also eliminates the parole system. Now, if you decide that you just want long prison terms because long prison terms are what you think people should get who can commit second offenses, then you're going to want...
No, that's not a fair thing.
Well,
then we should change the presumptive sentence.
I agree. But would you do that? No. Would you lower everything in half? Would you put, you know, you could do it anyway. We could redo the presumptive sentences, and we could say, instead of a 10-year presumptive sentence, we'll have 5.
That's
all right,
let's
vote on
this issue.
Okay.
All right, all those things, Mr. Didn't we go down this road once before, about 2 years ago in this week?
No, on this particular subject we did.
I don't know if we were
thinking about paroles and good time. And
it was in the determinant sentence.
I remember Stan was in a meeting, and so was Bradley.
That's the time when the governor was in the
determinant. That was a bill end that the rules never got out of the floor.
No, it passed.
Yes, it did.
We changed it to presumptive sentencing and rules, and it died in the Senate.
Yeah.
We have one no vote.
We're ready for the vote. Okay, all those in favor, Mr. Carpenter's motion, raise your right hand. All those opposed, same sign. Motion carried. You picked up my vote,
Larry.
4 to 3.
Thank you, Frank.
But before the court has sentenced to be good, why are we, what's the use of it? Why have section B there on line 26 when we have...
Yeah, I was right. No, I thought I'd make clear that
about now,
this was written a year ago before
BNC.
It was ever done. Yeah, BNC should not be...
Yeah, we were going to...
We need a motion to eliminate BNC.
I'll move to eliminate. Okay, there's a motion to delete section B and C in section 3320.010. Any discussion? Okay, if there's no objection, B and C are deleted.
Sorry, I don't need anything else because the repealers on the next page, the ones in Title 11 have been repealed anyway. The ones 12 were repealed just by the sentencing provisions. 3320.020, I presume you want to repeal, which is the section on other meritorious good time. And section 3320.050, I don't know whether you want that to, I think you want that to remain.
That's what I
want.
You didn't want
to start with the 60, you don't think you did.
No, I think you want 62.
Why would you want that? We don't think it's time. Let's say 50. Turning this 50 would be repealed. Are you saying it should be repealed or not?
Hold on. I don't know, I'm saying it should not be repealed.
50 should not be repealed.
Yeah, that's correct. Because, you see, this implied that you would have a subsection B, you know, which is back on page 12 on 26. We repealed 20, you know, that.
I think 50 is fine.
Yeah, 50 is fine.
Gets into it. Okay, Barry, you're saying that the one Title 11 was already
repealed. And the one Title 12 already repealed, too.
Okay, so then the only thing, we've got 020 is repealed.
Yeah, 020.
Okay, and the question is whether 060 should be repealed.
I think so. This is back to what Bradley said, you know, letting them regulate some people can either pay heavy.
That's where the uncertainty comes from.
Take it away from him.
That's where the uncertainty comes from. As it is, there's going to be a little bit of uncertainty because 050 remains, and there'll probably be some selective enforcement under 050. I don't mind
too much.
But 060, you're getting back to uncertainty.
Wait a minute. Is this a thing, though, where, let's say, that, you know, one of these deals, if you have these problems with the prison, in this particular prison, there's the prison guard doesn't like one prisoner. Keeps revoking all the good time, and then he appeals to the commissioner. The commissioner investigates and says, "Wait a minute, there's a problem here."
Well, I think we have that though under the 3-to-1 ratio we had. If somebody is in the forfeiture out there under 50, where kind of taking this time with him, he has it here.
Well, no, let's just say he did it every month. You know, he was particularly more or less discriminating against a particular prisoner, and finally the prisoner, you know, gets through somehow through an attorney or whatever. And you do have all those kinds of problems. That's the whole problem.
Mr. Chairman, I suppose if we were doing a thorough run-through on it, I would actually propose to amend 050 to make sure that
the governor's bill did not recommend repealing it.
60.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering why they repealed a lot of other stuff and didn't repeal that.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
As I start to say, if we were doing a big run-through on this, I would probably propose some amendments to Old 50 to make sure that there was some due process as to the question of whether the rules have in fact been violated. That bothers me a little bit, but I suppose on the same thing you said, that we're not doing an awful lot with the directions except reducing discretion. I think that the best compromise is just to eliminate Old 60. That puts a lot of pressure on the institutions to be fair under Old 50, because that's just about the only discretion they have left is the forfeiture for violating the rules of the institution.
Okay.
So I'm just going to move to delete Old 60, leave Old 50 in.
Okay. Does anybody object to that, then? Delete Old 60?
And
I just like to comment that people in corrections feel that the use of good time, taking it away and occasionally giving it back, although it may seem philosophically sort of unsavory, it's their greatest tool at disciplinary level in the prison. And what you're doing is you're letting them take it away, but you're not letting them give it back. And although it does cause uncertainty, taking away and giving it back, what more uncertainty it causes, you allow them not only to take it away, but to give it back.
Maybe we need to delete both sections if you want to do it that strong.
Yeah, I think both of them. Well, that just seems like a bad policy. I mean, what is that? If anybody's ever going to learn anything, they're just going to, the only thing they learn is, well, when you're on top, you can do anything you want. So that's the whole object. I mean, I don't know if people learn anything from what people do to them, but they do.
Well, the thing is, I think what the committee is
interested
in standards
for when they take
away.
Well, and that has been adopted, if I understand it.
In the regs.
Yeah, in the regs.
They do have regs.
Oh, yeah, it's a whole book.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I wonder what Mr. Stern thinks. To what extent does a prisoner have rights to due process once those regulations have been adopted and there is a forfeiture under 50?
Oh, I think you're still governed by due process. I mean, you know, no matter what the regs say, no matter what the statute says, how
to report with other things.
What's the question?
So you're sitting in the cooler and they're gonna forfeit to your good time. Department's recently come up with regulations that are supposed to provide a due process procedure. If you were before the Supreme Court of Alaska, would they say, yes, you've got to have that only according to due process? Or are they going to say, look, the guys in the cooler, is completely up to the discretion of the commissioner?
It's in between is the answer. There's no right to good time. Again, that's a privilege. So due process works differently than you have rights or even privileges. So you're giving them a right to good, well, no, you don't have a constitutional right to good time. You're giving them a statutory, you're granting them the privilege to good time through the statute. You don't have a constitutional right to good time by the Constitution.
But that statute would give him one day unless he himself.
Yeah, you're, okay. Okay. Okay, you are. You're granting him good time.
They can't take that away from him. That's the right to do.
Unless you break the rule. So anyway, this question did come up in McGinnis versus Stevens, and Judge Carlson ruled that there was absolute due process all the way, and the Supreme Court said no, it's sort of in between that there's a due process right to have a hearing, for example, but not to have counsel represent you. There's a due process right to have a hearing, but not to have a hearing of a disinterested body, which is what Judge Carlson said. So it's sort of half and half. Don't you think that's basically it's about half and half?
You can have a representative with you, an advocate,
yeah.
But it doesn't have to be counsel. It could be a criminal issue, actually.
I just don't want some guard telling the guy, hey, you need it, I'll give you some good time, I'll give you back the good time.
Maybe just hold on 1 second. We may want to change this.
Could you just 1 second?
I guess I'm less disturbed about it, from what Ann and Doug say. Apparently it's not full due process.
It's not full,
but it's standard, but it's... At least it's enough to avoid the worst abuses anyway.
And they corrections did adopt regulations to satisfy the minimal requirements of McGinnis versus Stevens. There are minimal constitutional requirements that have been adopted by regulation now, and they don't please some people, but they are at least adopted.
I suppose I'll withdraw my motion, Mr. Chairman. Let's leave Old 50 and Old 60.
Okay.
I want to note that I disturbed what Ann said. Exactly.
You're on the record.
Thank you, Counselor.
Inspector Bill.
Okay. We have a motion to adopt this good time thing as we've amended it.
So moved.
Okay. This motion to adopt the good time provisions as amended. Is there any objection? There's no objection.
Yeah, the applicability clause here that says that the presumptive sentencing only applies to crimes committed after the effective date of the act, but you shall, the prior convictions shall be considered whether it was done before or after the effective date. Then it says as the parole, it only applies to persons in prison for offenses committed after the effective date of the act. And then if the good time applies to all persons in prison in the state correctional facilities as of the effective date, but it's not retroactive. Doesn't go back to the Europe.
That's right. I think that's none of that is assumption of change.
Right.
Okay, if there's no objection, then the amended version of the good time is
and I say there's one more. I bet one's going to come up.
Yeah? Do you want to do first offenders or something?
You were going to
have your eight film here.
There we go.
Now,
you got well, how many more do you guys have?
Yeah, I've got my chart.
Well,
I also
got a handful of stuff there.
Is it none?
No.
Well, how many more do you have?
None.
I don't have any more.
One.
We're down to the big.
It's
not even
mine.
We're down to the big.
We don't have any.
This is really. This is
what
I'm going to go fishing on this one. Yeah.
Ed wants to bring this up. I'm usually always being too nice in the minority, but that's the policy of this committee. It's a policy of this committee, love and be loved.
A big ceremony here. This
man
that man
was grabbed by
me
on basic conversations with yourself and Ed. I don't care
what you say. Still different
lads, or? But you can do whatever you want.
In fact, caused physical injury to the victim.
This is Ed Dankworth Memorial's Law and Order.
Is this just connected with that?
This is a classification. This is
well,
a revised
tells us what we mean by A felony, B felony.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but that's not connected with this, right?
No, this is charge.
Right?
Yeah.
Just
charge for your
inventory.
Yeah. I'm selling it. Yeah. Now, I never got firm directions from anyone that I spoke to, but I mean, I did hear a number of comments from both Ed and Larry that went different ways each time. I came back with this.
You know, if I had a marker, can't lift it off.
I was there pride watershed.
Well, Ed, before you move it, you may want to change it. Go ahead and do so.
Oh,
so
we don't
have to amend your amendment. If you want to change it,
well, this somehow or other, you know, again, I have never seen the amendment before other than having a conversation.
I think he's done a good job on it, actually.
Well, I want to ask some questions about that.
Go ahead, Dan.
Does everybody understand what we're trying to get at here?
The word for felon is what you're going at.
Only with crime. The bad guys that are going out here, I don't think they ought to get the second shot at. You rape or murder somebody with a gun, that's just so serious that we don't see letting them off on the street again and without some making sure they don't spend a little time in the camp. Does that do that? This amendment is there, sir?
What's the amendment?
Yes, what it does.
Well,
you know, I have to start off maybe.
Well, the way you told me you wanted, the way I guess you wanted this was that you didn't want all A felonies subjected to a mandatory sentence or a presumptive sentence. So any felon may be sentenced to a term of not more than 15 years for an A felony. However, if there's a first felony conviction and the defendant caused physical injury to a victim of the offense by means of a firearm, he shall be sentenced to a definite term of at least 3 years, but not more than 15. What it does is that it requires a mandatory minimum sentence of 3 years for an offense where it's an A felony, first offense, and you cause physical injury by means of a firearm.
Well, but I wanted 3 years. In fact, my proposal originally was 5 years and 2 years on any other.
Again, I got different, you know, no one ever gave me a specific year figure. You can do whatever you want.
2 years.
Are you saying then that he has to cause physical injury before he's... If it's a class A felony, if you have to have a firearm, but don't cause physical injury, you have a gun. The way it's written now, that isn't what you meant, is it? If they had that gun, no matter what they used it or not. That's the impression I got.
Well, I suppose...
Well, it's very easy to bend.
Okay, yeah. Well, I didn't intend that. I don't want him to have to shoot somebody before he gets this. I want him to, if he uses a commissioner with a gun to commit one of these A felonies, any firearm, then I wanted to have at least, I don't know, that five, but I don't know, maybe seven or three.
I suppose an important question is to look to see what are the A felonies are when we consider this amendment. And this list was prepared at my request, so I could look at it after you proposed your amendment.
They're very two A felonies.
So basically, what you're saying is you want what's there, except he doesn't have to cause physical injury. He just used a firearm.
It's a firearm, it's a committed robbery, sexual assault, kidnapping, assault one.
Assault one involves serious physical injury, doesn't it?
Well, no, not correct. First-degree assault could involve an intent to cause serious physical injury by means of a dangerous instrument and only causing physical injury.
Yeah.